Thank you very much for your time today.
Thanks for letting us.
Senator Tom Carper is the chairman of the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee. Let's start with cybersecurity legislation, sir. Where does that stand right now, and what is the prognosis, in your view, for this session? It's been cooking for a long time.
Sure. We took a real serious run in 2012 toward developing bipartisan, comprehensive cybersecurity legislation. Couldn't do it. A business community, particularly the U.S. Chamber, said, no, we're not going to do that. We don't want the federal government sort of telling us what the best practices are. That's just not what we want to do. We're concerned about having their members who suffered hacks, having that made public, having a bad effect on their stock values. So end of 2012, we pull the plug. President, as you recall, in the State of the Union address in 2013, said, all right, let's hit the pause button, and let's instead ask NIST, which is part of the Department of Commerce, let's ask NIST, who works all the time on standards and measuring things. Let's see if we can get them to come in and sort of be the lead on working with the private sector, working with utilities, working with the folks who do financial services, communications, grid folks, utilities, and have them tell us what they think best practices should be. And they called it, the president called for creating a framework, which I don't know why they picked that word. Maybe it's a good word. But I think of it more as a roadmap or as a blueprint. And the idea is, how do companies, how do we figure out what best practices are? What are the best operating practices to keep the bad guys out from our systems, especially for critical infrastructure? I think the process for the last year, led by NIST, with a lot of heavy involvement from the business community, a lot of involvement from the U.S. Chamber, which previously been opposed to doing this, I hear only good. Only good. And so what we have identified best practices. The job of the Department of Homeland Security, in part, is to have the resources, the responsibilities to have the resources that they need to say to companies large and small, these are the operating practices that are deemed to be best practices. And if you'd like some help in figuring out how to comply with those or how to adapt your operations to these best practices, we'll be happy to help you do that. We're not going to make you. But if you want to, if you'd like to have a helping hand, we're there to help. And the other piece is these best practices, this blueprint or framework, is it's not like done. It's not like the Ten Commandments in stone, not to be changed. The idea is for it to be alive, dynamic, and changing. And as best practices evolve, we know they will. What is a best practice this week may not be a best practice next week. The idea is to continue to update the best practices. For DHS to be on top of that and to continue to be able to provide on a 24/7 basis a helping hand to companies large and small. And maybe folks that aren't companies, like state and local governments, maybe nonprofits, to help them adapt. So we're having a hearing, holding a hearing. Dr. Coburn and I are holding a hearing this week. I think it's this week. I lose track. But the idea is to bring in the folks from NIST and to say, how's it going from your perspective? Bring in folks from the business community, others, and say, this is what's going well, this is what's gone well, and what hasn't. I was with, during the recess last week, I spent some time with University of Delaware folks who have a big involvement and presence in cyber. DuPont Company, which has a lot of intellectual property protected and has a large operation in this regard. And we talked about a number of things. One of the things we talked about is cyber workforce and for them and the kind of work we can do at a university like Delaware and other universities. And we're working with technical colleges to make sure we have the workforce we need in business and government. And that was very, very helpful for me. The other thing that we talked about was the idea that, especially at DuPont, we talked about, we know we're on the right track with respect to cyber policy when it's synonymous with good business policy. I think that's a key. You know we're doing the right thing on cyber policy when it's actually good business policy to have a smart cyber policy and to continue to update your cyber policy. I think that's where we are to today. So in terms of legislation in our committee, our domain is more within the federal government, although the Department of Homeland Security has this role to assist entities, business, non-business entities, in complying with the best practices of the framework if they want that help. But the role of DHS is to help protect the federal government's domain and to instead of having a deal where, you know, we check every maybe week, every month, every year to see how's our systems, how good a job are they doing, do it 24/7, and we need to do that. So whatever authorities and people, manpower, woman power, that DHS needs, we need to help them do that. Dr. Cope and I are very much interested in legislation that will allow DHS, give DHS the authority to better attract and retain the key workforce people. And so that's one we agree on. The other pieces we need to work on legislatively within our committee, aside from what we call FISMA, Federal Information Systems Management Act, are the workforce piece, and there needs to probably be an R&D piece, research and development, so that we continue to update our security, our defenses.
Postal Service reform, sir. Postmaster General Donahue has given up on the idea of a health care plan unique to the Postal Service. Do you think that makes getting reform easier?
I think there's been a very good negotiation for months now between the Postal Service with management, with the unions, with the other groups that represent postal employees, and a good negotiation with OPM. Our committee's been very much involved in this. And so I think we're in a situation where the Postal Service, which has pays more money into the Medicare than any employer in the country, their employees pay more money into Medicare trust fund than any company's employees, they don't get full value. And when my wife retired from DuPont in her mid-late 50s, DuPont said to her, we'll provide you with health care coverage for a while, but when you reach 65, you'll be on your own. You can get Medicare A, Part B, Part B, Part D, and then we'll provide you a wraparound plan. Most employers do that when the retirees reach 65. The employer will provide the wraparound plan, but they want their employees to get Part A, Part B, Part D. The Postal Service has not been able to do that, and FedEx, UPS, they can do that. They're the Postal Service's competitors. So we feel that Medicare integration, where we treat the Postal Service like other employers are treated, is the right thing to do and the fair thing to do. That's a big part of our bill. And it will help us to transform a $95 billion liability for health care costs for retirees to something maybe under $5 billion that it just takes a huge a monkey off the back for the Postal Service and helps with all the other changes they've made in downsizing, right-sizing, and the new powers that that they'll have, and just a lot of smart things, innovative things that they're beginning to do that I think they should be in good shape going forward.
But the core of the Postal Service problem seems to be the business model. What do you think the Postal Service looks like as a successful entity 5 years from now, 10 years from now?
The Postal Service is the only entity in this country that goes to every mailbox in America 5 or 6 times a week. The question, key question for them and for us is there some way to take this legacy model, business model, unlike anybody else in the country, and figure out how to make money doing it? They're starting to figure it out. 20 miles from south of where we live in Wilmington, Delaware, there's an Amazon distribution center. Throughout this day and almost every day, they gather orders for delivery in the Mid-Atlantic, maybe the Northeast. They'll go out from Middletown, Delaware, in the wee hours of the morning. And the trucks, the scores of trucks that leave Middletown, Delaware with all these items to be delivered the next day will not go to businesses. They will not go to homes. They'll go to post offices all over the Mid-Atlantic and the Northeast. And the Postal Service will deliver tomorrow all of those packages. It's a good deal for Amazon. It's a good deal for the Postal Service. And that is just one example. Another good example, we had a hearing earlier this month on electronic recycling in the Homeland Security Government Affairs Committee. And there's a pilot program going on between the Postal Service and 11 federal agencies. When 11 federal agencies have electronic items to discard, they instead of put them off and send them off to either overseas or maybe a landfill here, the idea would be for the Postal Service to accept custody of them up to 20 pounds worth at a time, and to turn them over to entities, deliver them to entities in this country who will recycle them, who will use, take the valuable parts out of them, and the recycler makes money. They share in that profitability with the Postal Service. So the idea is, how do we use this old business model? Well, wine, beer, spirits, FedEx and UPS can deliver that. If state law allows, Postal Service cannot. We're going to let them do that. We're going to create a recommendation by a guy who describes, or others describe, as a recovering socialist, Bernie Sanders, a senator from Vermont, who's an independent, caucuses with the Democrats. But he's had actually some very good ideas to help make the Postal Service more entrepreneurial and more creative and innovative. So it can't be just cut, cut, cut. They've cut a lot, taken a lot of costs out of the system. It's got to be, how do we grow it? A lot of the business is moving from first-class mail to packages and parcels. For brick-and-mortar stores, they're seeing a loss of business. It's going to the Internet. But in that adversity, there's opportunity for the Postal Service to deliver a whole lot more. And our plan actually provides money, billions of dollars, tens of billions of dollars, for the Postal Service to invest in their plant and equipment and their vehicles. Their vehicles are like 25 years old. They're old. They're energy inefficient. They break down. They're not configured for package and parcel delivery. We're going to change that. We'll provide enough money to retool the processing plants with the kind of equipment that they need going forward, and we'll be able to provide the money for a whole new fleet of vehicles, more energy efficient, more reliable, better configured for packages and parcels.
You looked at modernization across government, did a hearing last week, and then the Washington Post puts a story out on Sunday about the cave in Boyers, Pennsylvania, where OPM processes retirement claims. What was your takeaway from that hearing? And what do you think when you look at, you knew about Boyers, obviously, for many years, but a lot of people are just learning that this is the state of retirement for federal employees right now.
When I read the article, frankly, I've been troubled by the fact that when people retire, they don't get their correct retirement pay within a reasonable period of time. Apparently they do get a retirement pay starting almost immediately. It's within 80 or 90% of the correct number. So it's not altogether bad. But I think it's an embarrassment that we're here in 2014, and we have this paperwork system, which some people say for a paperwork system works pretty well. But we've come a long way, baby. And when I leave the Senate, I want to be darn sure. And when the president steps down, I want to be darn sure that they can have that cave up in, where is it, Pennsylvania?
Yeah.
Up in Pennsylvania.
They'll
have
north
that cave.
Of Pittsburgh.
Maybe they can make it a tourist attraction again. But the idea that we're going to continue to process claims like this for ad nauseum is no good. I'm encouraged with a couple of things that we can do this. One, if you look at the way we used to handle medical records in the military, in the veterans, in the military, active duty, we didn't use electronic health records. We do now. In the VA, we didn't use electronic health records. They were the leader in like 15 years ago. Now we're working out a system where when a person leaves active duty with their electronic health record, and they configure to the VA system, that we want to make sure that it's a seamless transition. And it's not been easy, but if we can do that, we can figure out this retirement system and be able to automate it.
In addition to Homeland Security, you're now the chairman of the Transportation and Infrastructure Subcommittee on Environment and Public
Works.
When
Max Baucus was leaving, I said, Max, and he said, I said, I didn't want him to leave. I liked working with him. I said, why are you leaving? You know, we need you here for tax reform and the DOC fix and all this other stuff that we're working on. How can you leave? And he said, well, the president asked me to take this job of the ambassador to China. And he said, besides, he said, this will be good for you. I said, why? He said, well, you'll be the next chairman of the Transportation and Infrastructure Subcommittee. And I said, well, do you think they'll like pay me more? And he said, you'll inherit a lot more headaches, but you won't get any more money. Your job will be to figure out how to raise money to pay for all the transportation and infrastructure investments that are needed.
What do you want to do with that subcommittee, sir? What are you going to look at?
Well, I spoke with Senator Boxer just actually today. And the way it's worked in the past, the chair of the Environment and Public Works Committee and the ranking Republican, or the ranking minority member, whoever it is, who that might be, work as a team. The team also includes the chair of the Subcommittee on Transportation Infrastructure and the ranking member, in this case the Republican, John Barrasso. And I think that historically the four have been the leaders in the Senate in helping to craft the legislation going forward. And my hope and expectation is it'll work that way. Again, I enjoy working with all three of them and look forward to the opportunity. I'm delighted to have this opportunity. Part of dealing with our transportation infrastructure problems is having smart reauthorization legislation. The even tougher part is how do we pay for this? And as it turns out, I serve on the Finance Committee, as did Senator Baucus. He was the chairman, so he was in a little bit stronger position than I will be. But I'll have a chance to work on the authorizing language and also figuring out how do we pay for this. And I'm one who, when I was governor for 8 years of Delaware, I always would say about our infrastructure needs in Delaware, whether they're roads, highways, bridges, ports, airports, or they were water, wastewater treatment systems. If things are worth having, they're worth paying for. And I'm not interested in wasting any taxpayer money, but I want to make sure that this, I think, really despicable situation they have with a transportation infrastructure that earns maybe a D or a D minus every year, it's got to end. It's part of our if we want to grow our economy, we need to invest in, as we trim the sails on spending, we need to continue to invest in workforce, make sure the people coming out of our schools, whether they happen to be high schools or trade schools or technical schools or four-year colleges or beyond, I want to make sure that the folks that are graduating coming into the workforce have the skills that our employers need. I want to make sure that we're doing what we need to do in terms of infrastructure, especially roads, highways, bridges, airports, rail, ports, and water, wastewater treatment, broadband deployment. And the third thing is to I want to make sure that we're investing in R&D that can be commercialized, create technologies that can be commercialized and create products and services that we can sell all over the world. Those are the three things we need to do. Number two is transportation. And the president, my friend Dave Camp, chairs the Ways and Means Committee, have come up with an idea of corporate tax reform that will yield some considerable monies that could be used for infrastructure. Happy to consider that. David Camp's done, I think, great work. Max Baucus did great work with Orrin Hatch and the same arena. I don't know that we can get that legislation passed. But I'm interested in user fees. I'm interested in making sure that states have the ability to do some tolling if they want to, that we look at a road user charge. Some people call it vehicle miles traveled. This is one of those deals where I think we need an all-the-above approach. And in some states, they may want to have an increase in the gas tax. Some others will not. If you look at the gas tax, it was raised to about 18 cents in 1993. The federal gas tax has been that for 21 years now. States around the country, whether it's Wyoming, Pennsylvania, Maryland, other states, they've already raised their gas taxes by at least a dime. And George Voinovich and I suggested a while back was to raise the gas tax like either a penny a month or a penny a quarter every 3 months and to phase in a higher gas tax, but to do it slowly. If you go back and look at the gas tax that was adopted in 1993, 18 cents today, it's worth about 32 cents. And what I hope we'll consider is whether it might make sense to raise that maybe a penny every 3 months until the federal gas tax has been restored to its buying power in 1993. That might be an approach that works. But again, we're going to be open to a lot of different approaches. But at the end of the day, for me, is if things are worth having, they're worth paying for. I think the situation we have right now is just despicable.
Senator Carper, that's all the time we have.
Thank you
so much.
Thanks so much.
Great to see you.
My pleasure.